from fighting infection, she was lucky to make a full recovery, and she knew it. She told her friend she wanted to live her life to the fullest.
He nodded. I knew she was special.
You must have some, she struggled to find the right word, portraits of her. You kept them, didn't you?
He nodded slowly. She was beginning to earn his trust.
You kept them for a reason. You think maybe there's something in those images that might lead us to the truth about Amanda?
Do you promise this isn't a trick?
I swear, Jeremy, I only want your help.
It was only a matter of time before reporters found out that Amanda's body had been located, but so far the story hadn't broken.
There is new evidence that I'm not allowed to tell anyone. Based on that evidence, I don't think anyone's going to believe that you did anything to harm Amanda.
Next to her on the sofa, he began breathing so quickly that she thought he might be having a panic attack. When she reached over and placed a hand on his arm, he felt both warm and clammy.
It's okay, Jeremy, she assured him. You can trust me.
He stood quickly, as though he was trying to act before he changed his mind. He walked to the dining room and began sifting through a tower of newspapers and magazines. Holding her breath, Lori followed him into the room. From the bottom of the stack, he pulled out an oversized mailing envelope and handed it to her. Clear block letters on the front read, Grand Victoria, with the date when Amanda was last seen.
May I open this? She asked.
He nodded. His face looked pained, as though he was expecting her to turn on him. Lori slid the pile of photographs from the envelope and began to spread them across the dining room table.
There have to be at least 100 pictures, she thought.
A few looked like the posed shots that the wedding party had taken with Ray Walker, but most of them were obviously taken without the subject's knowledge. As she flipped through the images, Lori saw one of the entire wedding party gathered at a large round table near the pool. She could tell from the picture that it had been taken from a distance with a long-range zoom lens. Jeremy was actually a very good photographer. The focus was perfect. She was surprised to see two people holding hands beneath the table. There was no mistaking who they were. Trying to keep her expression impassive, she pulled it from the pile.
Do you mind if I keep this one? She asked.
That's okay.
Lori hesitated, then said, Jeremy, I want to hire you to do exactly what you did last time. Come back to the hotel now and take pictures of people on the set, and also take some long-distance shots of those people when they don't know you're doing it.
I'd like to work for you. Does that picture have anything to do with Amanda?
In a way, it does, she said, even though she was sure that the picture bore no relation to Amanda's murder. She wanted the photograph because she knew someone who would want to keep this image private.
She realized as she continued scanning the pictures that Jeremy had filed them in the progression of the day. The sunlight grew dimmer toward the bottom of the pile. She paused on an image that appeared to be of Amanda, taken from behind. She was in the sundress she'd worn for their afternoon session with the photographer, and the hotel bar was visible in the background. Lori held up the photo for Jeremy.
This is when you saw her in the promenade and turned around?
He nodded.
Jeremy, this is so important. It's just as you said. You were able to see beyond the false faces people put on for the public. Did you see Amanda and the groom arguing? Is it possible she was going to call off the wedding?
He shook his head, moved close to her side, and began sorting through the pictures himself. She could almost feel his breath on her neck. Here, let me help you, he said as he began pulling individual images from the ones she had already bypassed. See how they look at each other? They had no idea I was looking. People don't fake these feelings.
Jeremy was right. The pictures he singled out showed undeniable affection. Jeff wrapping his arm around Amanda's waist as she stepped into the pool. Amanda looking up adoringly while Jeff took the seat next to her at the restaurant. Their fingers entwined as they strolled next to each other on the beach.
Amanda and Jeff would have had no idea they were being photographed, but they appeared to be head over heels in love. "But here's the thing," Jeremy said, pulling out a new subsample from his collection to tell a different story. "I don't think the bride and groom and the two lovebirds holding hands beneath the table were the only people in love that week." Lori now understood what he meant when he said that his photographs captured the truth about people. "Can I take these as well?" she asked.
"Yes, you can have anything that's helpful," Jeremy said.
Lori could tell that he finally felt at ease with her. He volunteered one last image.
"And I know you'll want this one."
The final photograph he handed to her showed two people. One of them was Amanda. She was pulling her arm out of the other person's grip. Her mouth was open. She looked angry, hurt. The two were clearly upset. But the other person in the photograph was not Jeff. What time was this?
"Not long after I saw her in the courtyard. It was around 6 o'clock, before they all left to get ready for dinner."
"What happened after that?"
"The other college friend came down to meet them. Her name was Kate. It looked like they forced themselves to act like everything was fine once she was there."
"Did you take any pictures after that?" He shook his head.
"No, they were wearing false faces again. There was no point."
"And did you leave the hotel after that?"
"No, I stayed. The Grand Victoria is a beautiful place to be. It was nice to just walk around and take pictures of people on vacation."
"Did you see Amanda again that night?"
"Yes, I did."
Lori couldn't believe her ears.
"You know how when she disappeared, they kept playing the video of her walking with her friends to the elevator and then turning around?" he asked.
"Of course. It's the last time anyone ever saw her."
"No, it's not. I saw her."
"What happened next?" Lori was practically screaming. She was so excited.
"She was alone, heading down to the parking garage."
"Did you see her get into a car?"
"No, I followed her to the staircase and then stopped."
"Why? Why didn't you keep following her?"
"It's so quiet down there. Every noise echoes. I was afraid she'd hear my footsteps. I didn't want to scare her."
Lori could only imagine how different it might have been that night. If the killer had been lurking in the garage, the sound of Jeremy's footsteps might have frightened him off. 54. Leo Farley kept his eyes on Jeremy Carroll's front porch as he hit refresh on his cell phone's email app for what felt like the 30th time in 3 minutes. He had a love-hate relationship with computers. Sometimes he thought about how much easier his job would have been if he had all this technology at his fingertips back with the NYPD. And then there were moments like this when he wished he had an actual human being on the other end of a good old-fashioned telephone call. He had seen the worry in Lori's face when she stepped out of the car. Lori's show had been a phenomenal success so far. In both of the previous specials, the show had played a key role in identifying the murderer. Lori's work at the Grand Victoria would prove instrumental, but this might be the first time that she only managed to move the ball downfield without going over the goal line.
"I was a cop for nearly 30 years, Leo thought. "I've learned to know the difference between a gut feeling and proof beyond a reasonable doubt."
But for Lori, the sense of uncertainty was new. They still needed more evidence before the police could even possibly arrest Jeff, and Leo was determined to find it.
"Maybe I made a mistake," he thought, not insisting on going inside with her.
He had intensely lobbied Lori to allow him to accompany her inside Jeremy's house, but she insisted on questioning him alone. She was so driven to get to the truth, but at least she didn't come here alone. She had allowed him to make the drive with her. To keep his mind occupied, Leo had called the Office of Student Services at Colby and asked for help searching the college yearbooks for any information about Carly Romano. According to Jeff, he was only a casual acquaintance of the young woman who'd been murdered near the campus. If Leo could prove that Carly and Jeff had been an item, they'd be one step closer to building a case against him. When Leo explained he was a retired first deputy commissioner of the NYPD looking into Carly's case in his spare time, the secretary volunteered that the yearbooks all contained an index by students' names. She would scan any page mentioning Carly and email it to him. It was the only thing he could think to do as he sat restlessly in the car. Lori saw her father lean his head back in the driver's seat when she re-emerged from Jeremy's house. She wondered how many times he had started to leave the car to check on her.
Lori, that might have been the longest 20 minutes of my life, Leo said as she hopped into the passenger seat.
Dad, wait until I tell you, she said as she dropped the package on the floor and began to put on her seatbelt. Then her cell phone buzzed. It was a new text from Alex.
Local news just reported the discovery of Amanda's body. CNN is covering now. I'm taking Timmy to the pool, but we'll follow updates online.
She was still reading the message when her phone rang. It was Brett Young. She answered immediately.
Brett, I know. Big developments.
Huge. Please tell me you're almost finished filming.
We've got everyone who matters on film, yes. She could almost picture him popping the champagne on the other end of the line.
So how long before you finish? I want to start advertising now.
We don't have any answers yet, Brett.
We need to strike while the iron's hot. I want to go on air as soon as possible. Wrap it up, pronto.
There's a little problem. We still only have questions, not answers. She realized that the connection was already broken, and Brett had not waited for her response. Leo shifted the car into gear.
Brett must think you're Houdini.
The news got out about the police finding Amanda's body. Did you hear it?
No, I had the radio off. I was making some phone calls.
He wants me to finish as quickly as possible.
To what end? He protested. At this point, nobody knows who killed Amanda.
She thought about the photographs Jeremy had given her. Did she finally know who killed Amanda? Maybe. Leo dropped Lori off at the hotel entrance and waited for the valet to take the car while she went to see Alex. She had just walked into the hotel lobby when she saw Kate Fulton make a beeline in her direction.
Oh, Lori, thank goodness. I've been looking all over for you. I feel terrible thinking about anything other than Amanda right now, but it's really important. I already talked to Jerry, but he said he couldn't make any promises. I know I signed that agreement, but I don't want you to use my interview after all.
This was the last thing Lori wanted to deal with right now. She had Brett breathing down her neck, and she desperately needed to talk to Alex. She could feel the photographs in her briefcase pulling at her. She and Leo both thought she should take them to Detective Henson, but she wanted Alex's advice before making a final decision.
Kate, I think I know why you're having second thoughts about your interview, Lori said, but can we please talk about it later? I'm sure we can easily edit out the segment you're worried about.
Wait, do you know? Did Henry say something?
Lori reached into her bag and pulled out the first photograph she had taken from Jeremy. The one of the entire wedding party sitting around a table. Even from a distance, Jeremy had been able to capture Henry's hand entwined with Kate's.
An intern for the wedding photographer had this, Lori said, giving her only copy to Kate. And trust me, I'll edit out the part where you said you wondered if you got married too young, and no one ever needs to know.
Kate had been the first to turn in for the night after the bachelorette dinner. Amanda's brother Henry was the first of the men. They were the only married people in the gang. They were both parents to young children, eager for some downtime. After saying goodnight to their dinner companions, they had gotten together in one of their rooms.
I love my husband, Kate said. It was just one night. It was a terrible mistake, for Henry too.
You don't need to explain. Kate gave her a huge hug.
I felt so guilty for thinking about myself when they finally found Amanda. Poor Sandra and Walter.
Austin offered the whole family the use of his jet if they needed to get home, but they said they wanted to stay here.
They're actually holding up okay, Lori said. After all these years, I think they were ready to hear the truth.
There is one more thing you can help me with.
Anything.
Were Megan and Amanda arguing while you were all down here?
Not to my knowledge, she said. But as you now know, I had other things on my mind.
Why?
Amanda told you she was having second thoughts about the wedding and needed to find something out. Is it possible she figured out that Megan had feelings for Jeff?
I don't know. Maybe.
You don't think Megan killed Amanda, do you?
Oh, of course not, Lori said quickly. We just try to cover all our bases. She watched Kate head toward the elevator, knowing she was going to destroy that photograph. The pictures that mattered to Lori were still in her briefcase. 5 of them showed Megan at various times during the week, staring longingly at Jeff as he doted on his fiancée. But it was the final photograph that was most shocking, Amanda pulling her arm from Megan's grip during a heated argument. 56. Leo had just returned to his hotel room when he heard a knock at his door, followed by a familiar voice.
It's Lori. Dad, are you there?
She sounded concerned. He jumped from the chair to let her in.
Have you seen Alex and Timmy? She asked immediately. I can't find them anywhere.
Timmy left a note saying Alex was joining him and Jerry for the water park. He used 5 exclamation points.
The sight of her son's carefully printed words on the Grand Victoria stationery only partially calmed her.
When Alex texted me that he was going to the pool with Timmy, I thought he meant the hotel.
Leo expected his daughter to worry once again that Timmy was getting too attached to Alex, but she changed the subject back to the case.
Dad, I can't decide whether to take these pictures to Detective Henson.
She removed the photos from her briefcase and spread them out on the bed. Leo hadn't had time to study them closely in the car.
Look, she said, pointing to a picture of Megan glaring in the background as Jeff and Amanda posed under a poolside marble archway. You can tell she's in love with him, and he has no idea. And then, in this final picture, it's obvious Amanda and Megan were fighting. Megan never said anything about a confrontation after that one incident at the Lady Form offices.
You think they were arguing about Jeff? Leo asked.
Somehow Amanda could have learned Megan was in love with Jeff. Maybe she even sensed it was mutual. She told Kate she had to find something out before she could go through with the wedding. This picture may have been taken when she confronted Megan about her real feelings. I think they cut the argument short because it was time to get ready for dinner, but agreed to meet privately later. That's probably why Amanda was heading for the parking garage. If only Jeremy had followed Amanda all the way to the car.
I thought you told me that Megan and Charlotte rode up together on the elevator after Amanda said she forgot something.
They did, but once Megan went to her room, she was alone. We'll need to check with the hotel, but there must have been a way for Megan to double back out of the hotel from her room without being seen. The camera footage is grainy. If she changed out of her dress into jeans and a baseball cap, she could have passed for a man. Plus, I was thinking about Carly Romano. If she and Jeff were dating, and Megan was already interested in Jeff, then Megan might have been the one to hurt Carly, too. She wanted Jeff to herself.
At that very moment, Leo's laptop let out a high-pitched ping from the desk in the corner. He had a new email message. He nearly ignored it, but sneaked a quick glance. It was from the Office of Student Services at Colby.
Speaking of Carly, he said, I checked with the college to see if I could track down more details about her connection to Jeff. They scanned every yearbook page with Carly's name on it.
He opened the attachment to the new message.
I don't see any mention of Jeff here, he said, but take a look at this.
Lori scanned the tribute to Carly in her sophomore yearbook. She was the president of the debate team. Without Carly, the club had no choice but to elect a new president.
Carly's death was a tragedy and loss to our team and the entire Colby community. I only hope to do half the job she did.
Beneath the quote was the smiling face of the new debate team president, Colby Jr. Megan White. As Leo's laptop pinged with the incoming message, Jeff Hunter's cell phone rang. It was an unexpected call from New York City. Jeff was shocked by whom the caller was and what he said about Megan. 57. As Jeff ended his call, Austin signaled a poolside waiter and ordered a scotch.
By the time it gets here, it will be 5 o'clock. Who am I kidding? I started at lunch. You want anything, buddy?
Jeff shook his head but said nothing. Once the waiter was gone, Austin said,
I'm sorry. I can't imagine what you're going through. I guess most of us suspected Amanda was, you know. But it's got to be rough to finally know for certain. What was that call? You sounded upset.
Jeff told Austin he was fine and then quickly changed the subject.
Where's Nick?
He asked, even though the person he was eager to see was his own wife. Megan was with Kate at the hotel spa for the afternoon. After that phone call, Jeff was tempted to storm into the spa and demand an explanation. But in light of today's grilling by Alex Buckley, he knew everyone was suspicious of him. For all he knew, the police had undercover officers at the hotel, watching his every move. The last thing he needed was to lose his temper in public. But he was hurt and confused and desperate to speak to Megan. He took a deep breath and tried to remain calm.
Austin said, Nick's getting his boat ready. You know him. He takes forever.
Austin and Nick, always competing, Jeff thought. Jeff looked at his watch.
I doubt you two will have time for a cocktail cruise before dinner.
All the college friends were planning a group dinner tonight. After Amanda's body was found, Kate moved the reservation up to 6:30. It would be an early, somber evening, not the reunion they'd been expecting. Jeff didn't even want to go, but Megan felt bad about leaving Kate to mourn alone.
Not a cocktail cruise, Austin corrected. Nick's leaving early to woo a billionaire, remember? A client meeting in Boca Raton.
Right. With everything that was going on, it had slipped Jeff's mind.
Speak of the devil, Austin called out.
Nick was headed their way in Madras shorts and a polo shirt, his captain's hat already donned and a can of beer in his hand.
You finally got that poor excuse for a boat ready to hit the water? You're just jealous that I got the nicer boat.
Only then did Nick seem to notice Jeff's pensive mood.
Hey, we're just trying to keep things light. We're all sorry about Amanda.
Jeff nodded.
Where are the ladies? Nick asked. I'll see Megan soon enough back home, but I wanted to say goodbye to Kate. They decided to get facials and massages to take their minds off all this, Jeff said.
His eyes drifted to the corridor leading to the spa. No sign of them. Every minute without an explanation about that phone call felt like hours.
Were you able to say goodbye to Amanda's family? Austin asked. I just came from Sandra's. I almost walked away from her room without knocking, but I couldn't leave without expressing my sympathies.
Jeff didn't tell his friends that he had knocked on the same door earlier in the day, only to have Sandra slam it in his face. Austin asked how the Pierces were holding up.
Honestly, Nick said, not well. I got the impression they wanted to be left alone. They'll be having a family dinner tonight to talk about their memories of Amanda.
Austin held up his scotch and said quietly,
to Amanda. See you boys back in New York, Nick said. You hang in there, buddy.
Nick gave Jeff a comforting pat on the back, and Austin followed suit. Was Jeff being paranoid, or did even his best friends seem to be looking at him differently now? He needed to talk to Megan. 58. Lori pushed her chair back from the desk in her room the second she heard the beep of a key card in the door. Timmy and Alex were back from the water park, both in swim trunks and Nick's t-shirts. She gave Timmy a hug. His hair was still warm, and he smelled of chlorine and sunscreen.
So, how was it?
It was awesome. I think it was even better than Six Flags.
Coming from Timmy, that was the equivalent of Shangri-La. He surprised her by saying that he wanted to tell her all about it, but was hot and wanted to take a shower. He was growing up so fast. Once she heard the water running, she began briefing Alex on what he'd missed this afternoon. She showed him Jeremy's photographs of Megan, as well as the yearbook information from Colby. When she was finished laying out her case, he put his hands on his hips and exhaled.
Just when I thought we were getting somewhere.
I know. I was sure it was Jeff. Now I think Megan was involved, and I'm wondering if I'm missing something once again.
What about the ring Amanda was wearing?
Amanda could have been the one to take the bands from the safe. Maybe she wanted to try hers on to see how she felt about it, and maybe Megan didn't realize she was still wearing it later.
That's a lot of maybes.
Exactly, which is why I have no idea what to do with this evidence. In the other specials, we found clear enough proof to be absolutely certain about the truth. We were able to produce our show and identify the killer all at once. But now I have this evidence against Megan, and I want to keep digging. But Brett's breathing down my neck to finish so we can go to air. Plus, I feel like I should tell the police what we know.
Alex finished her thought.
But right now, it's exclusive to you, and if you share it with the public.
There goes my scoop, and Brett will want my head on a platter.
Is he really that ruthless? He'd want you to sit on evidence?
Unless it's subpoenaed, absolutely. He told me once that the Nielsen ratings were his religion.
She felt a hot coal forming in the pit of her stomach.
I don't know what to do.
Alex placed his hands on her shoulders and looked her in the eye. First of all, try not to panic. The last Megan knew, I was giving Jeff the third degree. She has no idea you have these pictures, right? Or that Leo called Colby?
Lori nodded and was already starting to calm down. Alex always had that effect on her.
Okay, he said confidently. That gives you some time to think. Why don't I clean myself up and we can all have an early dinner? Grace and Jerry, too. We'll go over everything we know, and then you can decide whether to go to the police now or keep working.
That sounds good, she said, moving into his embrace.
Now, is there any chance I can take your mind off this by telling you about the trip to the water park today?
I would love that, Lori said with a smile. I can't even picture Jerry with wet hair and a swimsuit hurling himself down a slide.
You would have loved the sight of it. He was like a big kid, and Timmy was overjoyed to have a friend who was at least as excited as he was to play in the water.
And what about you? She asked. If I ask Jerry, will he have pictures of you bouncing into the waves?
Alex put on an intentionally haughty expression. I'm much too dignified.
But it's possible I had an identical twin on the premises, and I imagine he looked ridiculous with 6 feet and 4 inches of arms and legs sticking out everywhere.
If Jerry has pictures, Lori quipped, I'm sending them to the law journal.
59. Jeremy had forgotten how sprawling the Grand Victoria was. He'd been roaming the property for nearly 20 minutes without crossing paths with any of the bridal party members he was supposed to be watching. It had taken him longer to get here than Lori might have expected. He needed to pack a variety of lenses for the job. Taking shots from a distance could be tricky, plus the light would change as sunset approached. He hoped he wasn't too late. He didn't want to disappoint Lori. He had been surprised and excited when Lori hired him to take photographs without the subject's knowledge. The first time she came to his house, she and her father made it sound like such a horrible thing to do. Then she did a complete about-face, offering him money to do exactly the same thing. He suddenly stopped walking.
What if this was all a trick?
The last thing he needed was another restraining order. He had been thinking about calling this whole thing off when he finally recognized someone. It was Jeff, the groom from 5 years ago. He hadn't changed much. He was rushing into an alcove leading to another section of the hotel. Jeremy was about to follow him when he saw Jeff reemerge, this time with a dark-haired woman at his side. Jeremy looked through his camera lens and zoomed in for a closer look. It was Megan, Amanda's maid of honor. Neither Jeff nor Megan looked happy. Jeremy immediately began taking pictures. Maybe he'd give them to Lori, or maybe not. Either way, he couldn't help himself. He loved to watch.
Shh! Everyone on the floor can probably hear us.
Jeff Hunter didn't care if the entire state of Florida heard them fighting. He had never been this angry with Megan before. Worse, he felt betrayed. The phone call he received while Megan and Kate were at the spa had been from Mitchell Lands, Amanda's estate lawyer. At first, Jeff assumed he was calling to express his condolences. The news of Amanda's body being found was all over the news. But that wasn't the only reason the attorney called. Jeff was so angry now, he could barely recognize his own voice.
Amanda's body was found only hours ago, and Lands was already calling to explain the process for moving her estate into probate.
I told him I never wanted Amanda's money, Jeff said. And then came the bombshell. Imagine my shock when he told me you called him this morning to ask about my inheritance. Why in the world would you call Amanda's lawyer behind my back asking how to get the money from her trust fund? You know I've never had any interest in one penny of Amanda's money, not even when we were supposed to get married.
Marrying Amanda is what you always really wanted, wasn't it? I knew this day would eventually come, the moment when you realized that she was the only one you ever loved. You only married me because I was her best friend, the next closest thing to your beloved Amanda.
Jeff couldn't even recognize the woman who was sobbing on the hotel bed. Did she really doubt his love for her? Is that why she called the lawyer? Was she planning to leave him and take half of the inheritance? He would give her every cent if she wanted. He just wanted her to act like the wife he thought he knew better than anyone on the planet.
Megan, talk to me. Why did you call that lawyer? You should have told me. Do you realize how horrible this will look now that they've found Amanda's body?
Megan buried her head in the pillow, leaving mascara stains on the crisp white cotton.
It was just one phone call. I wasn't thinking about the show, and I certainly had no idea they'd find Amanda's body today of all days.
They found her rings. Amanda's dead. All these years you said you thought she was out there living a happy life. You must feel something.
Now her volume outmatched his.
Of course I feel something. She was my best friend. You know how the producers asked me about that stupid fight we had over X-Dream workout clothes? I couldn't have cared less about Amanda taking that idea. I was looking for an excuse to lash out at her because she was marrying you. Don't you realize after all these years, I've loved you since college, and I had to sit there and pretend to be happy for Amanda while you fell in love with her. I've always been your second choice.
Jeff had never seen his wife this emotional.
That's not true, Megan. Amanda was... We were so different, and people change. I've never felt as right with someone as I feel with you, but you've got to tell me why you called that lawyer. I promise, it's not what you think. I can explain. You just have to wait.
There was a knock at the door. Megan looked through the peephole, then wiped her face with her palms.
It's Kate. I told her to swing by here before dinner. Now can you please stop yelling and have a little faith in me?
In an instant, her outburst was over, and she was back to her cool, level-headed self. At this point, Jeff had no idea where to place his faith. 5 years ago, when he was about to marry Amanda, he had nagging doubts about how well he really knew her. Now, after the bewildering rush of today's events, he found himself questioning how well he knew his wife. Sandra Pierce suppressed a wince as her son Henry confirmed with the hostess that their reservation was for 4 people. All these years, she knew that something terrible had happened to Amanda. Despite what the police and public wanted to believe, Amanda would never have vanished on her own. But some part of Sandra had always held out a glimmer of hope that they'd find Amanda alive, that they might be a table of 5 again. Walter was remarking on the unusual aquarium bar when Sandra saw a familiar group already seated at the back of the dining room. She let out a gasp, and Charlotte immediately grabbed her hand. "Mom, are you okay?" Walter, Charlotte, and Henry followed her gaze. Jeff Hunter was there, with that traitorous Megan, along with Kate and Austin. Sandra could not stop staring at Jeff. As Jeff lifted his water glass, Sandra pictured the same hand around her daughter's throat. "I can't stand the sight of him," she hissed. "He killed Amanda. I just know it." The hostess had obviously overheard her. "Shall I change your table?" she asked. "I have one at the other end of the dining room." Sandra felt a comforting hand on her back and turned to see Walter looking at her softly.
"You know what?" he said. "Now that we're here, I'm in the mood for steak. Would you mind if we went across the street? We can have the concierge call them for us on our way out."
As they left the hotel, Henry pointed out the beginning of a beautiful sunset. The sky was purple and gold. Amanda would have loved it. That's why she wanted to get married on the beach. Sandra felt Walter's strong arm around her.
"I'll never rest until we get justice for Amanda," Walter said. "But tonight is about our family. We deserve a night in peace to remember Amanda."
They walked to dinner as a family. Jeff Hunter saw the Pierce family turn away from the hostess stand and walk out. He had seen the expression on Sandra's face. She was judge, jury, and executioner. He wondered if he looked at Megan in the same way. He wanted to stand up in the middle of the restaurant and scream at the top of his lungs, "I did not do this!" His cell phone buzzed in his pocket. It was a text message from Nick.
"Boca's a beautiful place, but I wish I could be there with you guys. Hope you're doing okay, man."
Jeff would tell Nick later he was lucky to have left early. This dinner was a terrible idea. Austin was clearly bored without Nick. Next to Austin, Kate kept inching her chair farther away from him, probably remembering all of Austin's awkward passes in college. Megan was sipping water and barely talking, and Jeff wanted to leave this dinner table right now and demand that Megan explain why she called Amanda's lawyer about the will. Was this her plan all along? To marry Jeff once Amanda was out of the way, then spend his inheritance? He couldn't believe he was even entertaining the possibility. As they continued to eat in silence, he thought he saw a man in the distance staring at them from the courtyard. "Of course," he thought, "the police are definitely watching me." The man in the distance was not police, but Jeremy. He had followed Jeff and Megan until they entered the elevator, then watched the numbers click in order until a stop on their floor. When Jeremy followed, he could hear raised voices. But then he saw a man lingering in the hallway. He didn't want to call attention to himself by wandering around without a room to enter, so he rode back down to the lobby. He waited until he spotted Megan and Jeff again, this time with Kate in tow. He could sense the coolness between them. Even without words, body language told the story. He could also read the Pierce family. Their mood was heavy when they walked into the seafood restaurant. Of course it was, after the news about Amanda. But within minutes, they walked out, and this time they all looked even more upset. When they left the hotel, Jeremy had a choice to make. Watch the family or watch the bridal party? The answer seemed clear. Now he was wondering if he'd made the right decision. There was still tension between Megan and Jeff, but the preppy male friend looked bored, and the other woman was sad. Nothing much to see. Then Jeremy saw another familiar face. It was Lori's father, walking through the lobby, the man who had scared him so much at his home. Jeremy stepped behind a palm tree and watched the older man go down the path toward the Italian restaurant. Once he was out of sight, Jeremy followed and, through the window, saw him join Lori and several other people at a large round table in the back. Lori had asked him to take photographs of people participating in her show. She didn't tell him not to photograph her and her friends, too. Besides, whether this was part of the job or not, there was nothing illegal about standing here and taking pictures. He changed to a longer distance lens. Once he started shooting, he couldn't stop. The young woman with the long black hair was gorgeous, and the man sitting next to Lori was remarkably photogenic. Plus, the boy was adorable. These would be wonderful photographs for his collection. Jeremy was so engrossed that he didn't notice when Jeff, Megan, and their friends left the seafood restaurant and disappeared into the elevator. Lori tasted salt on her lips as the night wind from the Atlantic Ocean blew into her face. Her linen pants were rolled up high on her calves. She carried her sandals in one hand while Alex held the other. They must have walked a mile by now. As Alex had suggested, they'd talked through everything they knew about Amanda's case over dinner. There was evidence against Jeff, but against Megan, too. It could be either of them, or both working together. At this point, they may as well flip a coin. Then there was the question of whether to keep investigating or to rush to air. If it were up to Brett, the show would be on television tonight. By the time dessert arrived, Lori knew in her gut what she had to do. She just wanted one final talk with Alex alone before committing to a final decision. "I really thought we'd solve another one before calling it a wrap," she said wistfully. "That's not always going to happen, Lori. And look at how much you've accomplished. You've brought closure to a family who were forgotten by the system. Sandra told me today how grateful she was to finally have an answer about Amanda." "But it's a bad answer. She's dead, and we still don't know who killed her."
"But at least they're able to say goodbye," Alex said.
"It sounds like you've reached a decision."
"I have. We'll have one more film session tomorrow when you can lay out everything we know. You might want to repeat some of what you just said to me about saying goodbye," she said with a sad smile. "It would be a perfect way to end a story that doesn't really have an ending." Alex stopped walking and turned to face her.
"Speaking of my wrap-up for the program, there's something I need to tell you."
"That sounds ominous." Maybe my father was right, she thought. I told him Alex and I were fine, but maybe we aren't.
"No, not at all. But I won't always be able to keep working on the show."
"Is it because of us?"
"No, not at all. It's my practice. As much as I love an excuse to leave New York for days at a time, and with you no less, it's too hard to juggle my schedule. So far it has worked out, but that won't always be the case."
It was hard to imagine ever doing the show without Alex, and Lori immediately wondered how it would affect their relationship. She didn't want him to see how disappointed she was.
"You mean judges won't halt the wheels of justice so you can be a TV star?"
"Apparently not," he said.
His smile made her heart swell. Lori grasped his hand more tightly and continued walking along the beach.
"Brett won't be happy until I find another narrator as handsome as you."
"Well, that's impossible, of course," he said dryly.
"But I already have someone in mind.
Besides, it's about time Brett realizes you're the show's real special ingredient."
They were on their way back to the hotel when Lori felt her cell phone vibrate in her pocket. If that's Brett again, she thought, I'm throwing this thing into the ocean. She checked the screen to find a New York phone number, but not Brett's. This is Lori, she answered.
Ah, good. I caught you. I'm sorry to call at night. It's Mitchell Lands.
It took Lori a moment to place the name of the lawyer who had written Amanda's prenuptial agreement and will.
Oh, hi, Mitchell. You're working awfully late.
She whispered an apology to Alex. She shouldn't have even answered.
The life of a lawyer, I'm afraid.
I imagine you're calling because you heard the terrible news about Amanda. I'm so sorry.
I hate to say it, but in my business you get accustomed to hearing about death. I feel terrible for poor Sandra and Walter. They must be heartbroken.
They are. Is there something I can help you with? She asked.
No, but something's been eating at me all night, and I finally thought I'd better call you. It's about Jeff Hunter. He told me he's down there as a part of your show.
You spoke to Jeff? She stopped walking. Alex's expression grew concerned.
Yes, I called him as soon as I heard about the discovery of Amanda's remains. I thought he should know the next steps before Amanda's estate enters probate.
Not to question your tactics, Mitchell, but isn't that awfully soon? The identity hasn't even been officially confirmed yet.
I know. It's not my usual process either, but since there seemed to be an urgency to have the funds dispersed, I figured there was no harm in getting the ball rolling. But then he told me he was being questioned for your show. Is Jeff considered a suspect? If so, Amanda's parents could intervene to try to freeze the assets until the investigation is complete. I hate to call them about a legal matter at a time like this, but as I said, it's been eating at me all night. Maybe I shouldn't have phoned Jeff after all.
What do you mean, an urgency? I thought Jeff had never sought to collect on the will before.
He hadn't. And I guess he still hasn't. So I was a little surprised this morning when I got a phone call asking me about the inheritance.
Jeff called this morning about the will? Alex's eyes widened.
No, not Jeff, Lan said. His wife, Megan.
Lori's suspicions had been right. Megan was the one asking about the inheritance? What time was this?
First thing when I showed up at 9 a.m.
Not even Amanda's parents had known yet about the discovery of her body. Lori remembered Detective Henson saying that the person who called in the anonymous tip could even have been a woman, given the easy availability of voice distortion equipment. And she knew Amanda's remains had been found? Lori asked.
No, I'm sorry. I don't think I'm being very clear. Jeff's wife called prior to the news reports. She was asking about the process for Jeff to inherit, how to go about having Amanda declared legally dead, and the timing. I told her they'd have to hire their own lawyer since I represent the estate. But then once I heard the news, I called Jeff as the beneficiary to let him know that he wouldn't need to pursue a declaration once the death certificate was signed.
How did Jeff handle the news?
That's the thing. He seemed very upset and quite surprised when I told him that Megan had called this morning. I don't think he had the foggiest clue she was asking. She must have done it on her own. So that had me thinking he wasn't a suspect, but I decided to check with you to be sure.
When did you talk to Jeff?
A few hours ago, just before 5.
Lori said goodbye and turned to Alex. We thought there was no rush telling the police about Megan, but she called Mitchell Lands this morning, asking about the inheritance, and then Lands called Jeff.
As usual, Alex immediately understood her point. Which means Jeff has probably already confronted Megan about it. She'll know it makes her look guilty. We have to tell Detective Henson.
I'll ask Dad to do it. She trusts him more than either of us. But I need to call him right now. 63.
Just as Megan expected, Jeff laid into her as soon as they were alone in their hotel room.
"Why do you keep telling me I need to wait?" he demanded. "Are you trying to buy yourself time to come up with a lie?"
"I would never lie to you. I just can't talk about it right now. Not like this."
"Why in the world did you call that lawyer this morning?" Jeff insisted. "After all these years, and just hours before we all learned about Amanda's body, I can't get my head around it."
"I promise, there's a reason."
"Then tell me."
"Stop screaming at me."
"I'm asking you one simple question, Megan. I deserve an answer."
Jeff could not believe his eyes when she stood up, grabbed her purse, and walked out of the room, slamming the door behind her and leaving him in silence. Megan used the short amount of time in the hotel elevator to wipe the tears from her face and catch her breath. She and Jeff rarely argued, and neither of them had ever walked out on the other when they did, but leaving the room felt like the only way to keep her blood pressure from rising. The doctor had warned her to avoid unnecessary stress.
"Good luck with that," she thought, as she placed a hand on her belly.
She had no way of knowing whether the baby could feel it, but resting her palm near her unborn child was calming to Megan, if to no one else.
"Don't worry," she thought. "Everything is going to be just fine. Once your father calms down, I'll go back to the room. He'll believe my side of the story, I'm sure of it."
Megan had been planning to give Jeff the news once they were back in New York. She wanted a clean break between this place and their baby. She wanted it to be a perfect moment. But she never should have called that lawyer this morning. Of course it looked terrible, especially in light of the police finding Amanda only hours later. No wonder Jeff was demanding an explanation. She turned back toward the elevator, ready to tell him the truth, even though it wouldn't be anything like the moment she had imagined. Her cell phone buzzed with an incoming email message.
"There's no way to escape work," she thought. "How can I be on 24-hour call once I'm a parent?"
But the message wasn't about a client. The subject line said, "From Kate." She clicked on it. It read, "Hey there, I didn't want to say anything in front of everyone at dinner, but I have something important to tell you about Jeff. I think that TV show is trying to railroad him. Meet me by the pier behind the hotel so we don't run into anyone from the show?"
"Perfect," Megan typed.
"Jeff could use a few more minutes to cool down before we talk," she thought.
"Headed there now."
64. Detective Marlene Henson sprawled on the area rug in her den and allowed her two standard poodles to jump on top of her. They were three-year-old sisters named Cagney and Lacey. Even on days when her daughter Taylor stayed with her father, these two sturdy girls gave Marlene someone to come home to. Their exuberance about Mommy coming home temporarily quelled, the two dogs ran into the living room to continue an epic round of wrestling. She had learned the hard way when she adopted them as puppies not to leave anything breakable within a few feet of the floor. The upside was she no longer had so many knickknacks cluttering the house. She felt her eyes begin to close involuntarily. Marlene loved her job, but today had been a rough one. She had inherited the Amanda Pierce case, already cold, 3 years earlier when homicide detective Martin Cooper died of an aneurysm in his sleep. She reached out to Sandra and Walter the following week. She had told them that no new leads had come in of late, but Marlene had a standing alert with the department that she be called day or night if that ever changed. Then last night came the tip about the body. Since then, she'd been working more than 20 hours straight. She was starting to doze off right in the middle of the floor when her cell phone buzzed on the coffee table. It was a New York City area code.
"Hanson," she said, stifling a yawn.
"Detective, it's Leo Farley."
The ex-cop, she thought.
He'd been invaluable in dealing with his daughter and her team. She was usually distrustful.